Hey everybody, another week, another stream of slurry walling through the doors of your multiplex. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, coming to you this week from 1974. And with me, as always, are Scott Morris.
Hello.
And Ruth Avondale.
Hello.
On today's podcast, we're going to be talking to you about Mo West and Defiance, Twilight, £7, The Reader and The Wrestler. So without further ado, we'll crack on with the first of those and have a little look at Defiance. Based loosely, as these things always are, on a true story, Defiance takes liberty with the story of the Bielski brothers, a trio of Jewish brothers who led a resistance against the Nazis from within the Belarusian forest during World War II. It stars Daniel Craig, Liev Schreiber, and that Jamie Bell fella, without his tutu this time. Scott, what's your general synopsis?
I am left somewhat nonplussed by Defiance. I did kind of like it, but at the same time I find it almost impossible to be particularly enthusiastic about it. It's well enough acted, with the possible exception of the hello hello accents that everyone sports. The action scenes are well considered enough and they're well done enough. The characters are more complicated than the usual clean-cut heroism that you'd get in, say, war films of the 70s and so forth. I don't really have too many bones to pick with the film at all, but at the same time, I just really can't find myself too excited about it. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that we have, by this point in our lives, seen an awful lot of World War II films. While I've not seen this particular story before, it seems sort of familiar, and that's possibly the problem. Also, it is a very, very brown film, and as I mentioned during the Warlords review, I just don't like brown films. This film is very, very brown. I can't really think of too many things wrong with it. I don't have any real criticism that I can say to make it better, apart from maybe putting some more primary colours in or something. But that's not really a useful criticism, so perhaps I'll just shut up then.
My gripe with Defiance was that I can't point to any one area where it really necessarily put a foot wrong, but more than usual, Edswick's direction just seemed particularly workmanlike on this occasion, and there was no single aspect of it which was anything more than acceptable. Well, not acceptable, I mean, very competently done, but it was at no point was it ever more than that. And watching it, I just thought there are moments there, one in particular with a captured Nazi soldier that are really supposed to, if the film was to work properly, and I'm not entirely sure what its intention is, it's really more of a trying to be a historical document, I suppose, but for it to work effectively, it needs to be shocking, and even that moment, which on paper should be quite shocking, came across as being sort of quite bland, and just in general, I didn't think it was invested with enough emotion, and I didn't find myself involved with it at any point, whereas I mean, Edswick's last two films, Blood Diamond and The Last Samurai, I enjoyed very much, and both of those at certain points I find myself emotionally engaged with, but there just wasn't any of that at all with Defiance, which is a shame. I can't say it was a bad film, it was resolutely good, but nothing more than that. Anything to add?
Yeah, I don't really have too much more to add about this. It did feel an awful lot like a retread of The Last Samurai in places, as a sort of similar kind of structure to it in ways. And yeah, I just never felt particularly engaged by it. I don't think it's a bad film. I think actually, if you sat in front of it, for the most part, it's going to be enjoyable enough. Daniel Craig's always a fairly captivating performance, although it's probably one of his lesser roles of late. It's fine, but I can't really say much more than fine. And we should be seeing a good number of pretty good films over the next coming couple of months. So this doesn't really cut it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say to anyone, don't go and see it. If you've got free time in your hand, I don't think you'd be disappointed by it, and so much as it's necessarily going to prove to be something you don't like, but I don't expect there'll be many people who come away from it raving that they absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. But something of a missed opportunity then, not necessarily a misstep, but maybe not stepping up to all it could have been. Twilight is a film which seems to have been garnering the attention lately, mostly from sort of tweeny emo girls, because it features an improbably handsome vampire threatening to sink his teeth into the neck of some lovely young lady. I don't know. What's all about it? Anyone, Drew?
But it's largely not really about vampires in any way that most people looking for a vampire film would consider. If I wanted to watch a vampire film, I'd want something to be like Blade, whereas in this film, the vampires are largely incidental. the fact that the characters are vampires has got really sod all to do with anything. It's a really, really dreary, turgid teen romance, and that's all I want to say about it, because it's not any good.
Well, I've got to say, The Incidental Vampire would be a great name for a film.
Yes, we discussed that after having seen it, because The Incidental Vampire, but yeah, the vampires are secondary. They could have been anything. It's more just that this girl, young girl, falls in love with somebody from, you know, the bad family, the wrong side of the tracks, whatever other cliche you want to have. And it turns out that the reason the vampires don't go into light is because they're all shiny, and it's more dreary love story, and it ends, but unfortunately not soon enough.
I think my favourite thing about this film is that it just wasn't silly enough, so it had to be all that had to take place next to Reservation of Native American Werewolves, just because.
Not in any way set up for sequel there too at the end, was it?
No.
Well, I think it's the series of books on which it's based are numerous in tome, I think, so it's another one of these.
They were talking about efforts.
Yeah,
they were preparing for the sequel and organising the contract as a sequel within about a day of it getting its cinematic release in North America.
Well, of course, I'm surprised they didn't have it. You know, surprised they didn't have that software beforehand. I mean, these things are sort of cynically picked up in the first place. And have you written more than one of these books yet? Right, we'll take it then. You know, that's why I haven't bothered to go and watch it, frankly. But I dare say, ugly teenage emo girls get to have films too, so I'm sure it'll appeal to them. The inimitable Mr. Carol Pilkington once said it would be spiteful to put a jellyfish in a trifle, but what about if you put it in the bath? That's the question you'll be asking yourself if you watch 7 Pounds, the latest Will Smith vehicle, which this time he also produces. And it's not hard to see why, because he's clearly stretching himself for some sort of award which he ain't going to get. The story of a man who passes himself off as an IRS agent, who seems to be awfully interested in the lives of several disadvantaged people. But to what end, and what mysterious secrets does his past hold? Scott, do you want to expand on that for us?
Well, I don't particularly want to expand on the plot, because this is largely marketed as a sort of thriller. You're really trying to watch this to work out what's going on in Will Smith's past. That's why he's introduced being something of a completely unlikable twat and only really becomes sympathetic towards the last third of the film, which is in a way quite a brave thing to do for the script and the director. It is basically relying on Smith's charisma to drag you along to try and work out how he got to where he is at that particular time. And it would work, I think, if you've seen a bit less cinema than we have, perhaps. I think that the problem I had with it mainly is that I kind of guessed or figured out what had happened in Ben's past fairly quickly on, and once that happens, there's not really much of a hook to keep you interested. There is a sort of a reasonably handled relationship with Ben and one of the critically ill people he's bothering, and it's well done and it's well acted, and Smith obviously can act, but we don't need to tell you that again. He's clearly a very good actor, but this film did seem to be made quite clearly just to have Will Smith act in it.
Yes.
And flex his acting muscles again. And I don't know, I mean, I've spoken to people, like my parents didn't really clock to what was going on until the very end, till the final reveal, and they very much enjoyed it because of that. And I can see their point. But I think for people who've seen an awful lot of cinema, you're going to guess what happens fairly quickly. And once that happens, once you know what's going on, there's really nothing else to the film apart from just watching an actor's workshop with Will Smith. And seeing as I already know he can act, I don't need to watch the film.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I kind of sussed the gist of it fairly early on also. But, I mean, I think Smith's overstretched himself here. I mean, this is supposed to be an attempt to show his emotional range, I suppose. And like you say, it is quite brave to start out with a script for three quarters of which, or at least two thirds of which, your main character is portrayed as being a nasty bastard. Mm-hmm. And does he do that but well enough at the start? He's certainly all right at it, but I find him to be stretched at the point at which we're supposed to be feeling sympathetic towards his character. And it seems to, it revolves around a number of scenes where someone in some sort of dire straits, you know, be it in a horrendous relationship or in a state of frail health, imparts some sort of emotional statement and he's holding their hand, and then he's required to look sort of introvertedly anguished, and really it just consists of these people pouring their heart out to him, and then he sort of contorts his face as though he's constipated. And at no point did I connect with this guy, at no point did he convince me with his acting chops that this was the man going through some sort of emotional turmoil. It didn't cut it for me. I can imagine, like you say, that as people who probably watch more than an average amount of cinema, a lot of the mystique, which I'm sure the producers and the director would like to have surrounding this film, just doesn't come across at all. But even for the majority of the public, I find that I don't imagine there will be people won't enjoy it, but I would be hard pushed to imagine anyone would say they believe Smith particularly in the role, but maybe that's just me. I was quite disappointed by 7 Pounds, the whole sort of fractured narrative thing. 7 Pounds, 21 Grams, anyone? Yeah, I don't know. I just think it was trying too hard. It's one of these films at which, obviously, an actor and a couple of producers and a director have sort of got together and said, right, do you want to try and get some awards? And it just hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. Not for me, anyway.
It does seem to have been just sat down and written with the single goal of mind is, how can I make this as unlikable as possible for most of the time?
Yeah, which is, because then if we pull off a great redemption at the end, it's going to challenge the way people have viewed this character and blah blah blah. It's awards bait designed by committee, basically. And I think, yeah, and it hasn't worked, which is a shame. It could have been a potentially a very good film, but ends on a particularly silly note near the end. There is a particularly silly note which proves particularly discordant. On paper, you'd probably do as I did, laugh out loud. But there you go. And it's got Barry Pepper in it, whose face just annoys me. So I would say don't bother. But I don't know, Scott, would you recommend this overall?
No, I can't say much more than, well, written most of the review, which gets it 3 out of 5, and I'm wondering whether that's a bit generous with more think about it. But it's mediocre at best. Yeah, it's avoidable.
I would be stuck between 2 and 3, I have to say. So what then of the reader? I mean, surely it should prove to be one of the most enjoyable films this month, gathering by the awards buzz it's already generated. Drew, what's that all about?
It's apparently some sort of traitors and dullness.
Some sort of mass hallucination.
Well, it certainly managed to fool a massive number of people by having so much awards buzz surrounding it.
I'm convinced we saw the wrong film. We must have written a different screening.
Yeah, it's a different cut of the media or something.
I think maybe everyone else has.
Yeah, because they keep getting more and more awards every time I look at the news. It's like, it's gotten another award for Kate Winslet. And I can't help but think, why?
Awards aside, what's it actually about?
It's about some teenage boy who has an affair with an older woman, and after she breaks his heart, he meets her again later life and finds out something unpleasant about her past, and then becomes a complete prat. He can help her but doesn't, yada yada yada, dullness. Really, I can't remember much more than that. I just remember thinking, why won't this film end? Why did they get awards? End now, please.
That sounds like an accurate description, Scott.
Well, what largely sticks in my mind about this film is, firstly, it has the single most redundant example of fractured narrative that I've ever seen, where you're actually introduced to Michael, played by Ralph Fiennes, not Rafe, Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph.
As an adult in, well, it's not quite contemporary Germany, but he's as Rafe Fiennes is. And then it flashes back to young Michael, and then sticks with him up to the point where he would have naturally grown up into old Rafe Fiennes anyway. So why bother doing it?
You're forgetting a bit where it does flick forward to the modern day adult Ralph Fiennes for all of 30 seconds before switching back to see him looking out of a window at one point, I think.
I must have missed that, but now I see the true genius of the narrative there. Yeah, so there's that, which annoys me. The other thing that annoys me is that there's points at this where it just seems to stop and turn around and say, look, I am being very serious, you should consider me for awards. Anything that has this amount of full frontal nudity for no particularly good reason is just sort of going, look at me, I am serious, art house, blah 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 blah. And then it brings up other smoke screens that are pretty much irrelevant. The whole the main crux of the drama just simply isn't particularly interesting. It's more or less irrelevant. The relationship between Hannah and Michael is just at best weird and creepy, but for the most part just boring.
Yeah. Not only is the relationship and the actual main part of the story rather dull and pointless, the characters are also cowardly and astonishingly stupid. And you'll actually find yourself, if you were foolish enough to go and watch this, hating them because they are so incredibly stupid. I don't want to give anything.
Winslet as well, which is enough to make me hate
them. There's a scene where one of the characters takes some blame for something that they are not actually to blame for, and not doing it for any sort of noble reason or because they feel guilty or to protect other people, but simply because they're afraid of being embarrassed about something really, really, really insignificant in the great scheme of things. It's just frighteningly stupid that somebody would risk their life simply because they didn't want somebody to find out something very simple about them. Apparently that being slightly embarrassed is worse than spending life in prison, for example.
It does walk a very fine line between boring and idiotic, doesn't it? Picks up most of the worst quantities of both.
Yes, it managed to tread... it's not so much walk the line as it's got one foot firmly planted either side of it.
How do you think it compares to the director's previous work in The Hours, Drew? Because I know you're particularly fond of that one.
Well, the only thing is that The Hours is actually worse. So, you know, did that for a second. Oh no, please trust me that The Hours is worse, because after having seen The Hours, the first thing I thought was how many of those did I spend in that cinema, because it felt like about 32. The reader's just dreary, whereas The Hours is downright awful. And I just don't, to go back to another point, which is the Kate Winslet thing, I don't understand why she's being given so many awards. It's not like she's bad in the film, but she is entirely 100% adequate.
Can I just say that if God forbid the planets should align themselves in such a fashion that Kate Winslet is afforded the opportunity to make an Oscar acceptance speech, I'm going to skull fuck someone.
Can I just point out that I wouldn't care who wins the Oscars, because they've been increasingly irrelevant. I won't be watching it, so I wouldn't be hearing the speech anyway.
I'm not interested in the legitimacy of the Oscar. I just hate how falsely modest and over the top she is. It just sticks in my craw the way she behaves anytime she sort of appears in public and tries to act very sort of, oh, I'm so down to earth. I will kill her.
I don't recall ever having seen her accept an award or speak in public, so I'm blissfully unaware of such things.
You didn't see her Golden Globes thing?
No. No interest in that sort of thing at all.
Well, I tell you, I'm glad for you.
And I will say one thing about The Reader. I mean, there is one kind of interesting point that it brings up concerning sort of Germany's national guilt, but it does more or less ignore that in the end. And well, what's exploitative about it is that it's a film in English with mostly English actors doing really shitty German accents. And it just seems, given the main content of the film, the main emotional heart of it, it would seem somewhat exploitative if this were a German-backed film made with German money featuring German actors. But to see it's a mainly American-backed production with English actors doing allo allo accents, even worse than Defiance, just makes it seem like a surrealistic comedy at points. It's just somewhat, there's something sticks in my craw where it just doesn't seem right, and it certainly isn't good.
Well, damn it to hell.
Just before we move on, I would like to mention just one thing in reference to your question about The Hours, Scott. The one other upside that The Reader has over The Hours is it doesn't have Meryl Streep in it.
5 stars.
So just worth pointing out as a comparison between the two.
It should be in pretty much every poster tagline, doesn't it? Does not have Meryl Streep in it, says everyone.
Underworld, Rise of the Lycans, Boss, but it doesn't have Meryl Streep in it.
So the one excellent film released this month was The Wrestler. It was excellent in some very excellent ways. Mickey Rourke was excellent, and it was excellently directed by Darren Aronofsky.
Who is excellent?
He was excellent, and whose hair is excellent, judging by his picture here on IM from the premiere. Mickey Rourke not looking too excellent, but then he has been punched about the face for the last 10 years since he decided to go back to being a boxer. I don't know. Scott, fill us in.
The Wrestler sees Mickey Rourke's comeback. I'm not entirely sure Mickey Rourke was ever actually here to go away from, was he?
he had one big film in 9 weeks with Kim Basinger.
Nine and a half weeks.
Yeah, well, that's the old. I didn't watch the film to the end.
He was the last 3 days. Yeah, he was. Well, no, he was in a number of good films, wasn't he?
Was he? I can remember being in a couple of films.
He was in
Fire,
wasn't he? He wasn't in The Breakfast Club, was he? He was in Diner. He was in Angel Heart.
Yeah, I've got like Angel Heart, and there'd be a couple of things that I swear I've been in, but he was never sort of a big presence to have had been away for, in a way, as Scott says, to have had a comeback. He was never exactly top of the pops in Hollywood, was he?
Well, I think you're possibly too young to sort of remember the height of his fame, to be honest with you, because it was probably at an age where we were more preoccupied with Transformers and things, but he was certainly a marquee name, all right, in Hollywood history. And then I think he just got a reputation for being difficult.
So it is something of a parallel with his character in The Wrestler. Ah, do you see what I did there? Clever.
Oh, very clever.
Rourke plays Randy the Bull, who seemed to be something between, I don't know, halfway between Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior, massive wrestling success in the 80s in the pro wrestling ring. Didn't make an awful lot of money from it, though, and he's now far from flavour of the month and finds himself wrestling for 10-buck payoffs in school gymnasiums on the indie circuit. And it's essentially a character study of him and what his wrestling career has done to his body and to his social life. It's odd, because he always seems such a likeable character that it's kind of sad to see him fall on so hard times and living in a trailer. He's estranged from his daughter. His only relationship's with the local stripper at one of these strip clubs. So the narrative is more or less absent. It's just sort of chronicling a few months in his life as he goes through his wrestling career, suffers an injury, largely drug-related, which forces him to stop briefly before eventually just going back to what he knows and what he loves. It's quite well observed. It seems fairly authentic in terms of both sort of the behind-the-stage world of wrestling. It should, at least, I think, make people a bit more, maybe a little less sniffy about the obviously very silly sport of professional wrestling, or, well, sports entertainment of professional wrestling. But obviously the guys that go through it put their bodies on the line, and a lot of them wind up shambling wrecks, and just purely for entertainment for the fans again. Of course, it's their choice to do that, but certainly it's a very harsh life. And it is simply a very excellent film. There are lots of very sympathetic characters. They all feel very real. It's well observed. It's well directed. Like you say, it is excellent. Randy has excellent 80s hair metal, and he's also seems relatively convincing in the ring, at least so much so that apparently he's now going to be at WrestleMania fighting Chris Jericho, which is kind of odd. Apparently he's been booked for wrestling Super Bowl.
That's amazing.
Came out in the next couple of days. So, I mean, some people were saying, oh, that he shouldn't do this because it will hurt his chances for an Oscar. And it is the sort of performance I would love to see get an Oscar, because it's certainly a lot more compelling and a lot more likeable than, say, Will Smith in 7 Pounds. But yeah, so it's somewhat of an odd choice, but, well, hopefully it'll make him some money, and that's we'll save him, save Mickey Rourke from suffering the fate that Randy the Bull and the wrestler did.
There are two key elements to the film as far as I'm concerned, right? The first one, Mickey Rourke's performance, is absolutely brilliant. I wouldn't say it was mind-blowing, but it is absolutely brilliant performance, and that he manages to make such a sort of intrinsically... I mean, his character is just a born loser, essentially, isn't he? His brief height of fame aside, he's got very few redeeming qualities, and yet he manages to make this guy so sympathetic, it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it's hard to see how maybe Mickey Rourke could have played that badly, because it is essentially just Mickey Rourke playing Mickey Rourke, albeit in a different profession. Although hopefully he doesn't kill himself doing a stage dive at the Oscars with the crowd shouting for the Ram Jam.
Maybe you could pick up Kate Winslet and body slam her through a table with that.
I would certainly like to see him smack her with a set of step ladders. I doubt very much that wish of mine will be granted. However, There is no thing I would not wage against that. I will literally do anything that anybody names if that becomes a reality. If you can make that a reality for me someday out there, if you know Mickey Rourke and you think he might be willing to do that, I will do anything to see that. The second thing, which I don't hear anyone mention, and which I didn't really pick up on at first, and it was only towards the end of the film, it suddenly dawned on me, like not even the end of the film, it's probably the day after, is that Darren Aronofsky, at no point does he treat this world of pantomime wrestling as a joke. He's not condescending towards it. He doesn't set it up. He doesn't set it up for the occasional laugh. He portrays it with amazing respect, actually, and he shows these guys as people who care deeply about each other and who look after each other and who outside of the ring have great respect and are very professional with each other. And it's actually surprising, given everything we know about wrestling, that anybody would take this kind of opportunity to pass up the comedic elements of it. But he doesn't play a funny note in the whole film. He's never anything less than utterly respectful for people who, at the end of the day, for all the acting involved in the performance in the ring, are nothing less than athletes and whose bodies are remarkably tuned instruments.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to sit on the outside and be snotty about it, but you've got to realise when those guys are in the ring throwing each other about, they are literally putting their life in each other's hands, and there's been any number of people who've been either killed or critically injured. There's a casualty list miles wide.
Absolutely.
And that's even before you get into sort of self-inflicted injuries of sort of drug addiction and steroid abuse, which it doesn't shy away from showing either. It shows both the positive and negative sides of the guys who actually do it.
I think in retrospect, actually, that even more so than Mickey Rourke's performance, maybe that attitude is actually the heart of the film, because without that, maybe it would be more difficult to be sympathetic to his character, but knowing where he's come from and this group of people for with whom he works and the group of people sitting around the ring who have paid money to come in for whom he's an icon is actually what makes the film work. And I can't think of many other directors who might necessarily have thought to approach it in that way, but I actually think that's the key to the whole film. And with Mickey Rourke's combination on top of that, it's just the icing on the cake. I would love to see him pick up the Oscar for this, if nothing else. Just it's possibly, I'm loath to say it's the best film I've seen since There Will Be Blood, but it's certainly one of the best sort of two or three films I've seen in the last year. I really, really enjoyed The Wrestler, and I shall doubtless watch it many more times in the years to come.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's certainly a very early contender for film of the year for this year for me. Yeah, and it very possibly is. Certainly at least the top five films that I've seen in the last decade or so. It's a very good film.
And an interesting choice to choose that kind of subject matter as well, because I imagine the topic of inverted commas professional wrestling being a bit off to people, because a lot of people find it hard to, when they see, you know, just when they see the title of a film, to see past that whole sort of charade and the, you know, the theatricality of it all. I think anyone who's willing to take an open mind, even if you absolutely hate that kind of pantomime wrestling, anyone, if you can see past that and come to see this film, I find it hard to imagine anybody coming away from this film who wasn't at least slightly touched by it and who hasn't really enjoyed it. I think it was a fantastic film, and I'm glad I caught up with it.
I agree completely. As I say, early candidate for best film of the year.
You won't hear any complaints from me in that, so I'm glad we kept that one to the end, so that we don't finish on a bum note. We actually finish on a very good note. What are we going to be looking at in the next podcast, Scott?
Ooh, One Would Hope, Che Part 1, and Slumdog Millionaire, and possibly Valkyrie, and certainly Frost Nixon, which there's at least two or three good ones in there. So
I was going to say, a couple of them in there have been pulling nominations as well. So, oh, and we're going to be looking at Benjamin Button as well, aren't we? That's giving you some insight as to what to watch this week. Guys, the wrestler, we will be back. We'll be back hopefully next week with some more erudite insights. So until then, I've been Craig Eastman, and Scott was Scott.
See you on the flip side.
And Sleepless Drew was Sleepless Drew.
Bye-bye.
Catch y'all on the flip side. I think Scott said that already. Peace out.
I'll fix it in post. Maybe it was Meryl Streep that tried to kick my door in. She's the only person I've been consistently rude about for the past few years. So.